It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Good Sunday evening, everybody, or Monday morning, or Thursday afternoon, or Rosh Hashanah, or whenever it is that you're listening to this podcast. We're glad you're here. I'm your host, Joey Powell. You're listening to one of InsideCarolina.com's many glorious podcasts and all of the fantastic content that we put out. This is a special edition of the Coast to Coast. And why is it special? Well, Selection Sunday for 2021. They just finished putting the brackets out. Everybody's had a chance to dig into it and look at everything. Conference tournaments are over. It's also special because Greg Barnes has joined Sherelle McMillan and Sean Moran and yours truly today. So we're going to have a little special chop-up session. I think Tommy actually got a little mad because we're doing a roundtable without him, but I don't know that you can do a roundtable with four guys. This is going to be a basic square card table scenario, and I'm glad that you guys are here. Sean, how you feeling?
I'm doing pretty well. Still recovering from an LSU loss earlier, but was able to watch a lot of hoops and ready for the tournament.
Bad beats around. Sherelle, how you feeling?
Flustered. Daylight saving time and young kids, and that's why I'm flustered.
That's a bad recipe, man. Yeah. Greg, the guy that never sleeps, how you feeling, buddy?
I'm doing good. This is exciting for all of us. It's going to be a little bit different NCAA tournament. We're still at the moment, we're still waiting to find out a lot more of the details about how things are going to take place. We've got the Tuesday deadline coming up to see if any teams are going to be out because of COVID. Louisville is the number one team on the replacement list, which is interesting. And then, of course, we got 3 weeks to basketball and then got the Masters. So this month is something fantastic.
Y'all can tell Greg is the pro because he like actually wants to talk about the real stuff like as soon as we get going. So hat tip to the pro showing up to game day.
Thank you for having me, guys. This is an honor.
I'm wearing a collared shirt too. Man, you can tell this guy's
classing up the place. Classing it up.
Yeah. So we're gonna have to change our star rating on Yelp. All right. While you guys are listening, before we get off and running, I want to give everybody a chance, whether you're listening or viewing or however you're taking in this podcast, rate us and review us, please. Pretty please. If you don't rate and review us, Sherelle's children will cry. And unless you want to make Sherelle's children cry, then please rate and review us. That's all I'm going to say. Ratings and reviews help this podcast. They help us appear at the top of searches when people go and start looking for UNC content, and we want to be at the top. If you don't like what we're doing, shoot me a message. Shoot Buck a message. Shoot Ben a message. Whoever you want to. Send Al Gore a message. He invented the internet. Let him know that you don't like our content. But whatever. Let us know if you don't like what we're doing. We'll try to do better. We don't want to be putting out subpar content for all of our subscribers, viewers, and listeners. And before we get rolling, special shout out to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring this and all of the Inside Carolina podcast. Great locally owned company. If you need UNC tournament gear, hit them up. Matter of fact, if you're listening and watching this podcast, go to JohnnyT-Shirt.com. You can get the bench shirt that the Tar Heels have been wearing. And you can probably have that order done, and it might be shipped to you by the time you listen to this. Boys, before we do the bracket discussion, I want to hit you with a couple of questions about this past week and the week that was, and what you guys think about the Tar Heels' performance in Greensboro. Greg, since you're the new guy to this show, I'll start with you. What do you feel like that we learned about this North Carolina team over the last week that we did not know?
Well, I'm gonna steal from Sherelle. Sherelle, I apologize for this. One thing we talked about coming into the ACC tournament was North Carolina had proven that they can play with anybody. And late in the year, they were able to beat some good teams. The comeback against Florida State and Chapel Hill was clearly the best win of the season. But we had not seen them do that over a stretch of games. And, you know, you'd have a game or two here that's pretty good, then you have a letdown. And I think what we saw in Greensboro is that the team came ready to play and that they played well all three nights. If they make a few more free throws or maybe get a call or two go their way against Florida State, then they're playing in the ACC championship game. That was the main takeaway for me. And the other part of it, too, is when Armando Bacot is engaged, I mean, the team is completely different. When you have somebody in the post that you can just pound the ball into, and he has the skill set to be able to score, that's what you have to have. And he did that consistently. De'Ron Sharp's a kind of a beast on the boards anyway. And that's just a very tough 1-2 punch for teams to have to deal with. And the energy level was good. You know, it was a home partisan crowd, which helped. So all those things kind of work together. Now, I think they have to feel pretty good coming out of Greensboro.
Yeah. Sherelle, what about you? What do you feel like we learned about this squad that we probably didn't know a week ago?
I wondered if they could beat competent competition with Kerwin Walton not playing well. And they beat Notre Dame by 50 without him playing well. And then they beat Virginia Tech, a decent team by, I think it was 8 was the final margin, without him playing well. Now, when they played Florida State, which, you know, you consider the kind of team they're going to play the rest of the NCAA tournament, they really needed him in the second half to hit a couple of shots. And that's kind of what spurred on the run. But it was heartening, I guess, to see RJ Davis come through and have a really good game. Heartening to see Caleb Love, you know, after a pretty rough first half against Florida State, come out and hit some big shots. You can say what you want about his percentage. It's not great. He struggled. But when it comes time, you know, to really make plays, I think him and RJ Davis have a knack for that. It didn't finish the job against Florida State, but to me, kind of additional growth in the backcourt, even though they struggled against Florida State, I still think they got better. And so if they get better, you're starting to see a little bit of that consistency finally come through that Greg talked about, that we've been talking about all season. Because even though they didn't play great in the first half against Florida State, they were pretty good for most of the second half. So of the, you know, 6 halves that they played, you would say they played fairly well in like 4.5 of them. And that is something that I don't think they've put together much, if at all, this season.
Yeah, still searching for that elusive 4-game win streak, but they did get 3 if you back up to the Duke game and the first 2 they got this week. Sean, similar question, going to put a little bit of a twist on it for you. Are we going to feel like that this season should have been, you know, like we had about another week or two in the season? Are fans going to really want to have seen this team for maybe 2 more weeks the way we've said all year, especially based on what we saw this past week in Greensboro?
Yeah, I think definitely. And that goes to what I'm sure we'll talk about soon in terms of seeding. You know, when you get stuck with the 8-9 game, obviously you're playing one of the top teams in the country in that second game. But I think with how UNC played in the Duke game, and then as Greg mentioned, you know, really playing three games in a row in the ACC tournament where they're playing well, I think it was the first time for the most part that UNC fans said, wow, this team is fun to watch. I'm really enjoying watching how they look out there. And I think they're able to do it really three days in a row, sans the first half of the Florida State game. You know, in Georgia Tech, you had a three big rotation, which is where UNC has always been best at. And it got everybody maybe a little more comfortable a little quicker. And then you have the freshman guards who, well, you know, they still struggled at times, but over the last 5 games, you have Love and Davis both shooting, you know, high 38, 39% from 3, where they've struggled tremendously. And you do see a lot of the pieces coming together. And yeah, if, you know, they're out in the next weekend, I think a lot of people would love to have just seen a few more weeks of basketball, given how it's turned out right now.
So I'm going to handicap you guys for the next question. I'm going to take the 100-point outburst, 101 to be exact, against Notre Dame off the table. What was the biggest surprise this past week? Sean, I'll just, you know, snake back to you.
Biggest surprise. I'm going to go with the Florida State comeback. Obviously we saw it happen and they finished it off the first time. I think seeing the halftime score, was, you know, at times you're like, oh, is this, they're right back to how they were looking, you know, a few weeks ago, but they, you know, they pushed through, took the lead, but then Florida State exerted its dominance on the defensive end. So I think the surprise was them coming back and taking the lead to me. Not that it's out of the question, but I think that was the biggest surprise. Other than that, I think, you know, RJ playing well, really well against Virginia Tech was a surprise, because I think, you know, in the preseason, myself and Sherelle, we just talked about RJ so much, and we had really yet to see that come out. And he finally played well. Obviously Florida State, he had the drive that you don't really know what he was doing at the end, but once again, it's confidence, and you're going to need the guards to hit their shots coming up.
Greg, same question. Surprise for you from last week.
Yeah, I like what Sean said there, but I'll go a game before because Virginia Tech came out and they decided that they were going to be incredibly physical with UNC.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that work a lot in the past. You know, Roy Williams likes a finesse style, likes to get up and down the court. And Virginia Tech was very physical and really got up in North Carolina. And it didn't look as though North Carolina was going to be able to deal with it. And then halftime rolls around. Roy Williams, either he said Armando Bacot was soft or he said he was playing soft. But whichever it was, it worked. And that was something that Bacot talked about after the game. He doesn't like to be called soft. And he took it personally. And they played with a lot of energy. This team has shown, I mean, dating back to the first couple weeks of the season,
mm-hmm.
that they could come back.
Yep.
That they're not scared when they're down. And so we've seen that all year long. But their ability to say, you know what, this team is being physical with us. They're kind of punching us in the face. What are we going to do? And for them to be able to come back in that game really impressed me. Because the way they played against Notre Dame, everything went their way. That wasn't the case against Virginia Tech. And so they play really well. And then as Sean said, you know, they get in the Florida State game. Like, okay, well, we've been here before. We were here last night. And I think that helped them be able to come back.
Sherelle, last question before we head on to talking about the NCAA tournament and looking forward. What was your biggest surprise from Greensboro? At least with regard to this team. Sorry.
They took everything. So there's nothing left. I'll say that Carolina won two games, which is one more game than Florida State won. Florida State was in the championship game. So that's also my biggest surprise.
They won the same amount of games as Georgia Tech.
Yeah, it's just weird. I would probably go with the Virginia Tech thing too, just because, you know, Virginia Tech looked so amazing in those first couple of minutes, even though UNC was only down three during the first half. And it seemed like just one of those nights. I don't know if y'all have the feeling with Carolina or you kind of recognize the signs of, okay, they might not have it tonight. And this is going to end up being a game where, you know, they – end up losing by seven or eight. They make a spirited run, but in the end, Virginia Tech hit them in the mouth and they never quite recovered. We've seen that play out time and time again. And I think, like Greg said, the fact that they came out and then kind of punched back and kind of suffocated Virginia Tech the rest of the game, that was pleasantly surprising.
Yeah, that aggression definitely came out of the locker room the second half. It surely wasn't there the first half, but I agree with all those points. All right. Want to take a quick break. Shout out to Johnny T-Shirt. Let the national guys pay some bills. We're going to come back and talk about the NCAA tournament, the bracket reveal, all that good stuff. All of you listening and watching right now, stop. Go to JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I just pulled up before we started recording today, just pulled up what their new arrivals were. And there is some really, really good looking stuff on there. I mentioned earlier, they do have the bench shirts that UNC is wearing. We've got some really nice looking fast break, or they're calling them fast break shorts with the Jumpman logo on them. Good looking stuff. Some pop sockets on there if you need those for your phone. I didn't realize that was still a thing. And they've also got a ton of gear for all of the other sports. So spring sports are going on right now. Baseball team just completed a sweep of Clemson. If you want baseball gear, Johnny T-Shirt's your place. Go to JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Go by the store on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. However you want to procure your goods, Johnny T-Shirt's the place you need to procure them from. Locally owned, alumni operated, Tar Heel people through and through. Be sure to patronize them. All four of the faces you're looking at right now are fans of Johnny T-Shirt. We hope that you will be as well. And as always, Inside Carolina premium subscribers get the extra 10 off the top of their phenomenal prices. JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Check them out. We appreciate their support and hope that you will support them. National Guys going to pay some bills with their commercials. We'll be right back.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, thanks for sticking around. You're listening to the Coast to Coast special edition of the Coast to Coast podcast called The Bracketing. It's because at times I fancy myself an amateur filmmaker, so I come up with crazy names like that, and that's what we're going to call this podcast. Boys, I sent you the notes ahead of the show for some things to consider because they just finished releasing the brackets just a little bit ago. I'm going to try to hit you guys with some stuff and just get your insight and where you think things are going to go. As we've seen, North Carolina draws an 8 seed. First round opponent is Wisconsin. Let's do word association. Give me one word on your first impressions of the North Carolina draw. Sherelle?
Tempo.
Greg?
Say Virginia.
Which is a synonym for tempo at this point. Sean? Yeah.
Mine was slow, so it goes with all the other ones.
I'm sensing a theme right now. Well done, gentlemen. This is like you guys almost rehearsed it. My impression was Clemson, just mainly because I thought that Clemson got the draw that North Carolina should have got, but whatever. So after seeing that Wisconsin, you know, throwing some stats out, Wisconsin is something that we talked about previously on the show that has a lot of the things UNC did not want to see. They're a veteran squad. They don't turn the ball over. They shoot 36% from beyond the arc. So, Greg, I'm going to throw it to you. What's the best and worst case this coming week for the Tar Heels?
You know, in some odd way, I think getting a tough opponent like Wisconsin in the first round is probably a good thing for this team. Because I know fans and players don't do it near as much, obviously, but fans tend to overlook that opening round opponent. Especially even in the 8-9 game, which doesn't make sense, but it happens.
Right.
As soon as people say, oh, Carolina's in Baylor's bracket, that's going to be a heck of a second-round game. Well, now Wisconsin has your attention. And the fact that it is an experienced group, I mean, they are battle-tested. The Big Ten, if you watch the Big Ten tournament this weekend.
Heavyweight fights, man.
That is quality of basketball that we have not seen in the ACC this year. And Wisconsin lost a lot of those games. And I know they didn't win many coming down the stretch. But, I mean, they're 10th in the 10th in KenPom, 26th in the net. I'm a little curious how they got a 9 seed. but 5-10 against Q1 opponents. So, I mean, they've won some big games. They've played in a lot of big games. And so I think that aspect of it is really going to get North Carolina's attention. I think Carolina has an advantage in the post, as they do pretty much every night they take the court. But yeah, I mean, we knew with North Carolina likely being an 8 seed. I mean, they're going to have to beat Florida State to get up to a 7 line, I think.
Yeah.
And so being in that 8 seed line, you're going to have to win some big games every single time you go out. There's no easing into the NCAA tournament when you're an 8 or a 9. And so they're going to have to play great every single night. We've talked about it before. There's not been a Roy Williams team that hasn't won 4 games in a row. This team is not yet. So they're going to have to prove it. But I think starting with a quality opponent will maybe allow them to kind of grease the tracks a little bit. And if they win Friday, give them a little bit of a chance going into that second round matchup.
That's an interesting perspective. I had not considered that getting them to lock in early, pardon the pun, might be something that would help them. Sean, what are your thoughts about Wisconsin, you know, other than it's just a gross matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're kind of going both ways. So one, as you mentioned, this, you know, the things as a Carolina fan you don't want to see. We saw the Clemson and UVA games. For the most part, UNC has been playing games in really 71, 72 plus in terms of possessions. And you look at Wisconsin and you're probably going to get 64, 65. So right off the bat, you're going to be limiting possessions, which they haven't seen in a few weeks. As you mentioned, they don't turn the ball over at all. They've got 3-point shooters and they've got some size, but on the flip side, going back to, you know, before the Iowa game, I kind of made a note about the Big Ten, and it's not true this year because they have been really good. But in general, as a Carolina, you know, fan, you don't really think they should lose the Big Ten teams. And here's a team talent wise that they have more talent than. And sure, they don't have as much experience, but they do have more depth. It's also a team that, while they shoot the ball very well, a lot of it is from their guards. And they don't, you know, they kind of have a more of a traditional team where their four, sure, he can stretch the four a little bit, but he's not going to be, I don't think, really killing UNC off the dribble. And now they're driving and kicking. So I think UNC, from a talent perspective, is more athletic, has some size. And I think, you know, if they're able to do well on the boards like they have been doing, you know, I think they should be able to come out with a win. But once again, it's going to be a slugfest. If they can contain Wisconsin from three, you know, they're shooting 35-36% on the year, but I think there's only been one or two games over the last 10 that they've really gotten hot. So once again, it's going to come down to 3-point defense, and can UNC's guards make some plays at the end?
You know, I noticed that you mentioned that UNC fans probably think that, you know, UNC should never lose to a Big Ten team. Listeners of this show will know that Sean Moran thinks that UNC should never lose to a Big Ten team. But as Greg said a few minutes ago, this is not the Big Ten of 5 or 6 years ago. This year's Big Ten tourney was some high caliber, some athleticism, some real grit and toughness from what we have not come to expect from that conference. Sherrell, your initial assessment of North Carolina v. Wisconsin, and what do you feel like, you know, the best and worst case scenario for the coming weekend is?
I agree with Greg. Again, that was a great point about getting their attention, because it'd be very easy to just look at Baylor and be like, oh, you've got a chance to be the number one seed and go to the Sweet 16 and, you know, kind of all that talk. And I think, you know, Roy Williams can say, we've played Wisconsin before. I coached a team that was much more talented, that won a national championship, that struggled with Wisconsin. And we've struggled with Wisconsin in the past. So I think he has that message built in that he can give them. As far as the team is concerned, you know, they haven't been terrible in games under 70 possessions. Just looked it up. They're 2-3 in games with 70 or fewer possessions. Of course, UVA is one of those, which is a loss, we know. But they beat Notre Dame. They beat Pittsburgh in games with fewer than 70 possessions. And they also lost to Texas by 2. So it wasn't like, you know, they've been horrendous in those matchups. They've fared decently well, I would say. So I think they can play that style, but I think I'm very curious to see if Roy Williams does what he did at the beginning of the year. They did a little more full court pressure just to try to speed things up some. I think the UNLV game, they did that. The Stanford game, a couple of possessions. I think maybe even Texas, even, you know, with the great guards that they had, just to switch things up a little bit. So I'm hopeful they'll do some of that just to break the monotony of what could be those 32, 33, 34 second, or excuse me, I'm old school, 29, 30 second possessions that Wisconsin has. So I think that's a key, is that if North Carolina can speed them up a little bit. But it all goes back to Carolina, man. And I don't mean to sound repetitive, but if you play good defense at UNC, what happens? They miss a shot. Mm-hmm. You grab the rebound. You can push tempo. And if you push tempo, that gives you more possessions. It gives you more chances to get offensive rebounds. Same thing with turnover. So all this stuff just, it works together. And that if you don't turn the ball over and you play good defense with the size advantage that they have, I mean, I don't think they should lose the game. You know, obviously they could, but to me, that's the big thing. Just every, like we said last time, every possession ends in a shot, and I think they have a great chance.
You mentioned there, and I like this angle a little bit, that Roy Williams may try to hurry them up a little bit by doing some full court token pressure. That's something that UNC may do. What's something North Carolina has to do to have any success this coming weekend, whether it's against Wisconsin or if they somehow get a chance for a second game? Sherrell, what's one thing they have to do this weekend?
Oh, it's live ball turnovers. Like, they can, even some turnovers are acceptable because you want aggression. You want them trying to, you know, have the hit ahead. You want them trying to make plays, but it's the live ball ones, the ones where you're just dribbling down the court and you can't handle it and it goes to somebody else for a layup. The ones where, you know, you finally secure a stop and you pass it out, you know, on the outlet to the point guard and someone intercepts it. The ones where you, you know, you're driving into the four people and put up a shot and it's blocked and they go to the other end for a layup. Those are the ones they have to control. And I think that really is all on the freshman guards. Like Dewey talks about it all the time. Like, you're not freshman anymore. You've played 28 games, 29 games. You're not freshman anymore. And I think that Roy Williams will kind of tell his guys that he expects more from them. You don't have to be all American and go out there and have a triple double or anything. Just take care of the ball and the rest will figure itself out.
Greg, same question. What's one thing North Carolina has to do to have any modicum of success this weekend?
I think a lot of it's up to Armando Bacot. This team has, these guards have an issue sometimes with making quality entry passes. And so it is imperative on the bigs to really be able to establish position. What we saw in Greensboro's, a lot of the smaller teams really had some success early in trying to front UNC's bigs. Mm-hmm. UNC was kind of able to work around that. But when Bacot does his job in terms of establishing position, it's tough. I mean, if you look at what he did against Florida State, they pushed him out and he received the pass numerous times, 10 feet from the basket. That's not going to get it done. But when he's at his best, he's doing it on the block. He's big. He's got his length. And that makes those entry passes so much easier. And so I think Sherrell's of the opinion that Corin Walton is the key to this team. No doubt about it. I think if they're able to have some success inside, that, you know, alleviates some of that stress on the outside, and they can get some shots falling, then everything works together. So there's a lot of different components. I mean, I was going to say turnovers before Sherrell did. So all these things kind of work together. But just having some success, knowing that you can go inside and have good looks, I think is the first step for this team, because at least they can fall back on that. And that's something that when they do it well, it really helps them, you know, come back. And we saw it, you know, against Florida State. That's what they did in the second half.
Yeah, and even as improved as Armando Bacot's footwork has been this year, it's not improved enough for him to catch the ball 14, 15 feet away from the basket and still make a move without putting himself in some kind of peril. I mean, it's just, that's basketball 101. And against a team like Wisconsin, it's going to be tough again. Sean, the one thing that the Tar Heels need to do to have success this weekend.
Well, I guess going last, I'll go 3-point shooting. Always talk, you know, at the beginning of the season, always talk about six being the number of what, you know, for the most part, they were struggling to get up to, and now that's kind of has really been kind of an average point. And I think we saw, you know, if Kerwin is hitting threes or RJ, how, you know, you hit two in a row, six points, of just how much that can open the game up. So once again, you're going against Wisconsin that can shoot the three well, and they're averaging about 9 threes a game over their last 10. So if you can keep pace with them while not forcing the issue, I think that will open things up for Armando and the guys inside, as well as hopefully some driving lanes. But once again, the Wisconsin will be focused on Kerwin, at least initially. So it's probably going to be hard for him to get open looks until a little bit later. So can some of the other guys step up? And once again, RJ and Caleb have been shooting a lot better, but now can they do it where it's kind of life or death?
Ceiling for the Tar Heels, guys. Sean?
Ceiling is beating Baylor. I mean, it is a long shot, but you know, I think it is possible. Once again, Baylor is a team that everybody shoots over 40% from three, but at the same time, they usually play two guys that are not 3-point shooters. So kind of a matchup wise, I think you have an ideal matchup from a one seed. I'd rather have seen Illinois or Michigan, but I think from the ceiling, it's getting to the second weekend. And then the floor is losing to Wisconsin. So, you know, you go either way, but I think if they do get past Wisconsin, I think they could at least be competitive, you know, with Baylor.
Sherrell, same question. What's the ceiling for the squad?
Yeah, I would say a competitive game against Baylor. You know, I think they can beat anyone in the country outside of Gonzaga. Mm. Like, Gonzaga is the only team I would say, you know what, there's not a way really for them to beat them.
Yeah.
Baylor and everyone else down, it could happen, but it would take, you know, it would take five different things and, you know, breaking UNC's way, plus maybe some bad, some luck, some players maybe having games that you wouldn't expect them to. So I would say a competitive game against Baylor where they have a chance to win it, you know, say at the under four timeout. I think that is, that's close to ceiling for this particular team. Floor, yeah, is a bad performance against Wisconsin. A performance where Wisconsin, you know, gets hot early and is able to hit, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 3, something like that. That would be the floor. And, you know, you don't want to see the season end that particular way. So if they can make it to the second weekend, it would be a phenomenal story, but it doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, we're on the same plane. And we've talked all year on this podcast about how razor thin UNC's margin for error is. All right, Greg, I'll hit you with the same question. We'll get on to some overall tournament discussion. What's the ceiling for this group? And I'm surprised nobody said the roof. So thank you guys for doing that. But Greg, what do you think the ceiling for this team is? You feel like it's about just making a game against Baylor?
I do. I think Sean and Shrell said everything that needs to be said. I mean, when you look at Baylor, I mean, they're third in the country in effective field goal percentage. They're number one in the country in 3-point field goal percentage. And they make 42% of their threes. And defensively, they force turnovers 25% of the time. That's not a good matchup.
Oh, that's gross.
For the Tar Heels. And, I mean, they've got, you know, one of the best players in the country in Jared Butler. I think that's just tough. And then you, even if you project out and say they somehow get by Baylor, I mean, you got Arkansas who's playing good. I think Ohio State is a legit. I mean, that was a team that was a fringe number one seed. Second weekend would be phenomenal, but I don't see them getting past Baylor.
How lucky is UNC that they got Kentucky in December instead of Ohio State?
Yeah.
Think about that,
could have changed the trajectory of the season. That's for sure. That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, that's another loss. And are they back on the bubble? You know, who knows? I don't know.
All right. We're going to slide our wide angle back a little bit and take a larger view of the tournament. I have promised the people out there in the Twitter sphere that this will be a no bracket guy show. Nobody on this panel, including myself, is going to try to be bracket guy, but we are going to talk about just some basic analysis. Guys, are any of you surprised by who's in and who's out? I mean, I think that Louisville being the first team out and then some of the teams that got in, Drake and some of those other ones are pretty big shock. Shrill, any of those things jump out at you?
Yeah, I like everyone else, Louisville surprised me. I don't – maybe we were missing something, but it seemed like they had done enough to get in. It seemed like, you know, they played in a conference and I don't know, maybe it was the Carolina loss. Maybe it was the way they went out in the ACC tournament. But I just assumed, you know, they were in the tournament. So that was pretty surprising when I looked at it. Syracuse as an 11 seed. I thought they would be, I thought they were closer to a 10 personally. Not that I'm an expert on this by any means. But they looked like a good team, you know, the way they played against Virginia, the way they beat UNC. So I just thought they were a little bit better than that. So that surprised me some, but other than that, I mean, just, you know, just kind of flip a coin. And I think all this stuff typically works itself out.
Greg, surprises?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of disagree with Sherelle there a little bit. I mean, I thought Syracuse was going to be in the last four in group.
Really?
I thought they needed to close a little bit stronger than they did. I mean, I guess the Carolina game probably got them in. But then Michigan State, and granted, I know you're looking at an entire body of work.
Right.
But last 3 weeks of the season, they beat Illinois, they beat Ohio State, and they beat Michigan.
One of them handily.
Yeah. So you got two wins over number one seeds, and then you got a win over number two seed. That's impressive. That's really impressive. And yet they're in the play-in game against UCLA. So I was a little surprised. I kind of thought maybe they would be switched a little bit. And then Clemson. The fact that Clemson was a 7 seed was a little bit surprising to me when you compare them to some of the other teams in the seed line around North Carolina. But those were the primary. I did think Louisville was going to get in. They didn't. But beyond that, this is kind of where the placement was that was surprising to me.
Clemson did shock me a little bit, especially since they bowed out of the ACC tournament so quickly. I was shocked by that. And Greg makes a great point about Michigan State. You almost wonder how much they're being in the the Big Ten may have lifted them or gave them a little bit of a boost going in for the committee's thoughts. Sean, anybody jumped out at you surprises one way or another?
Nah, not a whole lot. I mean, I think the biggest surprise, and probably wasn't really a surprise, was more of a wish of where UNC was going to end up. And I think Greg hit on it earlier. If they had beat Florida State, maybe they do get that seven seed. But, you know, the ideal scenario would have been them as a seven in that Houston side. But really, in terms of who was in, who was out, you know, no real issues. I think Louisville, you know, going back to when UNC beat them at the time, that was a huge, you know, UNC's biggest win and a huge win. And then all of a sudden, a few weeks later, you know, Louisville, they did get the game at Duke, but for the most part, I mean, they just didn't really pass the eye test. So I wasn't too surprised that they're the first quote unquote replacement team. I think, you know, one surprise was going out in the quote unquote West bracket, and you have Gonzaga, and they could see, you know, they have Iowa, Kansas, UVA, all teams that they played out of conference that they beat. But yeah, you know, UVA, I was obviously shared my distaste for them, but you know, they could easily lose in the first round, but they could also get to the Sweet 16, where, you know, they've already been punched in the mouth once by Gonzaga. Now, at least they know how it's going to come at them a little bit more. Not that they have the offensive firepower to withstand it, but I think that could be an interesting matchup. But overall, no huge surprises. I think everybody that was the first four in, last four out, I mean, you should have done something more to get in. So, you know, no real teams that I thought were very deserving of getting in that didn't.
You know, something that didn't surprise me, and I'm sure Tar Heel fans will probably echo this, is that once again, Duke doesn't have to play anybody, you know, to get to the other side. Just cakewalk. No, just no tough opponents whatsoever for Duke this year, and it just blows my mind. Guys, who do you feel like has the best path to the Final Four? I'm not asking you to pick a Final Four, just one team that you feel like, wow, that it shocks me they've got the proverbial easy walk, right? Every year we always talk about somebody – especially when North Carolina is good, right? Folks are always have this discourse about who's got the cakewalk to the Final Four. Who do you guys think has the cakewalk this year, Rel?
I wouldn't say a cakewalk, but I like the position that Texas is in. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, the Michigan State UCLA winner could easily beat BYU. And I think that Texas would be a great matchup. Or I think Texas would like that a lot, to be matched up with either of those three. So I think that you kind of project forward to me. I think they're much better than all four of those teams, including Abilene Christian. And that puts them in the Sweet 16. And I'm just not quite a believer in Alabama yet. I'm sorry. they're too reliant on the 3-point shot for me at this point. And I'm sure I'll eat these words in a couple of weeks. So I like Texas as a team better, the pieces than what Alabama has. So, and then Michigan has Isaiah Livers is hurt, and who knows if he's coming back. So to me, I like Texas more than anyone in that region. So not necessarily an easy path, but I like the path that they have.
You could see things breaking for them. By the way, shout out to the committee for making one of the play-in games, Michigan State and UCLA. If that doesn't scream, we want ratings for a random play-in game, I don't know what does. Greg, who do you feel like probably has an easier draw than maybe their seed would warrant? Or when you're just looking at this bracket on a sheet of paper, who do you like and think could probably skirt their way to the Final Four pretty easily?
Save for one team in the bracket, I think the Midwest is set up surprisingly well for Illinois. And granted, I'm a huge Io DeSumo fan. I mean, the guy is as clutch as they come. He's a fun player to watch. You know, they're good on both sides of the court. Top 10, I think, KenPom, both sides. Cockburn inside is a legitimate 7-footer. I mean, that team to me is probably my favorite for the whole thing. However, I do think the committee screwed up in their seeding. I don't think West Virginia should have been the three. I think Oklahoma State should have been the three. Mm-hmm. They got the switch. So that Sweet 16 matchup potentially between Oklahoma State and Illinois is going to be fascinating. And I think that is the only roadblock in that region for Illinois.
Yeah, I sat on the radio show with Tommy Ashley on WCHL Inside Carolina Live on Saturday, which everybody listening to this podcast obviously listens to. I love Illinois when they're good. when Illinois is on offense, Dosunmu, Coburn, they're actually really deep, but they're also a team that can score with anybody in America. So I think that's actually a pretty good call. Sean, is there anybody that jumps off the page to you for having a good draw on this particular bracket?
Oh, Illinois is going to have to hope they don't get in a tight one and Dosunmu starts going one-on-one like he was against Ohio State with his step-back threes. He almost cost him that one. But, yeah, they do have a lot of talent. I would say Baylor, I think, has, you know, obviously it could be a UNC matchup, but I think Baylor has the best bracket in terms of getting to the Final Four. We talked about Clemson and kind of that ideal seven draw. Not that I think they're going to do much with it, but if UNC had been in that one, could have allowed everybody to dream a little bit more. Florida State, I think they got a tough matchup with Wes Miller and UNC Greensboro. Would have loved to have seen them as a 13 seed matchup with anybody else, but I do think Florida State could potentially make a little bit of a run, especially with Livers hurt for Michigan. And Colorado's a interesting team. They can shoot the ball, but I think Florida State could make a run. And then I think, up in the West, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Kansas performs. Obviously their Big 12 tournament got cut short, but, I think they could be a team that has a little bit of juice in the tank to make things interesting, especially with Iowa as the two seed who just hasn't, they've been really up and down a lot lately. So I don't really see Iowa going too far. So I think, some of those teams, Kansas, Florida State, could be interesting if Florida State can get past UNCG.
And I'm also going to kind of tailgate on Sherrill here a little bit for the same things that he said about Texas. I feel like BYU is way overseeded at six, probably could get a couple of breaks their way. And I'll be honest, Syracuse at 11, San Diego State is not the San Diego State of a couple of years ago. And we've seen what, Syracuse's zone can do to teams in an NCAA tournament setting. All right, fellas, getting down towards the end here. I'm throwing this out only because of what we saw happen with Kansas, Duke, Virginia, and some other teams. Over under on games that are going to be forfeit or uncontested, or do we think that there's going to be any sighting of Louisville in Indianapolis this week? Greg, you feel like we might see some COVID issues?
Yeah, I think it could be like the ACC tournament where maybe you have a couple and everybody kind of spazzes out, thinks, oh no, this whole thing's going to come to an end, and then that's it. So it would surprise me if maybe two games were affected.
Yeah.
Just randomly. But I think for the most part with them, the way they've got this set up, they get everybody in, they can bubble them. They're not having to travel a whole lot. The idea of having seven consecutive days without positive tests, all those kind of things, I think they've structured it as well as they can. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's going to be much of an issue.
All right. Greg says two games at most. Shrell, you going over or under?
I'll go under. I was going to ask, are they already – do we know if the team's already there in Indianapolis?
Some are.
Yeah, I know some went.
Virginia's not going until Friday.
Okay. I think they have to. Yeah, I think they're supposed to quarantine in Charlottesville. A lot of the teams went straight there. All the Big Ten teams are already there, right?
Yeah,
that's where the tournament was. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that's half the field anyway.
So I'll go under then, Joey.
Sean, how you feeling? You think we're going to see some COVID issues up there, or do you think they're going to have it managed as best as possible?
I'm going to go zero. If there are issues, I think, they'll be able to find the needed five players to play or however many it is. So, I'm sure there probably will be a few, but I'm going zero in terms of my prediction.
So you guys do not think Louisville is going to get into the tournament?
Nope. I mean, well, there could be issues like in the next few days, I think, where we'll see any fluidity, but once Friday comes around, I don't think there's going to be anything that throws a wrench into the mix.
Well, and teams have until Tuesday night to declare themselves as either COVID-free or, hey, we've got some issues. So I think we'll definitely know by – Greg, I know you're always good about this, giving folks an idea of when we'll have an idea. So Tuesday at midnight or 11 p.m. or whatever it is. Okay. Not going to be bracket guy, not asking you to pick your Final Four. But I would like to hear who you guys think is going to win this, mainly because I'm playing the odds. Our good friend Tommy Ashley says give him either Baylor or Gonzaga, which isn't a bad bet. I threw it up as a poll on Twitter the other day, and it went about 65-35 in favor of the field versus Gonzaga or Baylor. That aside, guys, tell me right now who you're picking as your national championship winner. Sean?
Well, you said odds, and I had a moment of regret. Just, won't be in Vegas this year, which is disappointing for the first round, but I'm going to play it safe and go with Gonzaga. I think, as we saw in the conference tournaments, how you weren't really seeing the one seeds win, especially in the major ones. And I think that will allow for this tournament to be extremely crazy, but I'm just going to play it safe and boring and go with Gonzaga.
All right. So Sean's going to lay up rather than going right at the stick. And in that spirit, I'm going to translate over to Greg, who is our noted golf ace. Greg, you're going right at the pin, right? Who you picking for national champion this year?
Yeah, I think Sean's on point there, because I think this tournament is going to be chaotic. I think there's going to be a lot of upsets.
Wow. Okay.
But I think the top level teams are not going to be affected. And as of probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was fully expecting a repeat of 2008, where you had all four number one seeds.
Yeah.
Not get to Indianapolis because you're already there, but to be in the final four. Michigan now, not exactly sure with injury issues and just the way they've been playing. But I've got Gonzaga beating Illinois in the championship game. Gonzaga from day one has impressed me. They've got three legitimate player of the year candidates. I just think they are too good offensively to not win this thing.
Very efficient and very old, as we've seen, which does well in March. But hey, Juwan Howard will fight you if you say Michigan can't win it all. Sherrill, I'm leaving it all to you, buddy. We gave you some extra time to kind of dig at things and see who you think is going to win the national championship. Are you going to jump on the Gonzaga train, or are you picking somebody else?
I've told Tommy I will take the field. He said Gonzaga, you can have Gonzaga. He can have Gonzaga and Baylor.
And you and I are in that boat. Yes, we're both taking the field.
So first off, nobody's going to pick Carolina on the Inside Carolina podcast. Is that correct?
I am not picking North Carolina. That's
okay.
Correct.
I'm not
to
either.
Win a game or to win,
to win the national championship.
You never know. Stranger things happen. Now, I'm going Texas, man. I like Texas a lot. I've said it all year. I just think the experience they have in the backcourt, the versatile players they have on the wing, the depth and the amount of big men that they have, the athleticism that they possess, a coach who's been there before, they have role players. I just feel like Texas has it all. And if there's anyone outside of those number one seeds, I think I would trust Texas. Now, if they lose to Abilene Christian, I never said this, but I like Texas a lot.
Hey, not going to fault you. Again, they fit the mold, right? Old guards can play inside, can score or can slow it down. I think there's a lot to like about Texas. And I'm going to throw a pick because I'm the host and I can do that here. I actually like Illinois, and Greg almost stole it, but I like Dosunmu. I love Coburn. I think that they've shown that they've got some depth. They've got some dudes on that team, and they've played really well as of late. I think getting through that tough Big Ten tournament, they flexed a little bit. And, just like anything else, if they get cold, they can get beaten. But I just think they're showing off at the right time. And I'd love to see somebody not named Baylor or Gonzaga win it, just because I'm with Sherrill and we've told Tommy that we're taking the field. So, guys, last chance. I always leave the door open for any parting shots that you want to throw out that we may have missed over the course of the show. Anything that our listeners have to hear before we wrap this podcast. Greg, as our noted new invite, what do you think?
No, I think there's going to be a lot of questions about how North Carolina ended up with an 8 seed and not a 7. And when you kind of go down the seed list, UConn was 26, Clemson 27, Florida 28, LSU 29, and Loyola, Chicago was 30. Carolina, of course, was 31 on that seed list. LSU, had a great run this weekend, SEC tournament. They had 5 Q1 wins. Florida had 5 Q1 wins. Clemson, I think you got an argument there. And then Loyola, I don't think I pronounced that right that time either.
Loyola, we got you.
2-2 against Q1 teams.
Ah.
So even if you take away Clemson and that team I can't pronounce, North Carolina still.
Sister, whatever her name is, that old lady, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they were seated where they needed to be seated. And it's just it's one of those things. If you just pull out a couple more games, whether it be Marquette, or maybe win that Syracuse game, yep, or get a few breaks against Florida State. Now you're talking, you're in the 7-seed line, and we're probably talking about a team that has a legitimate chance to get to the Sweet 16. But number ones are so good this year, so it's going to be very tough.
Sherelle, anything else you feel like we may have glossed over that has to get on this episode?
I would just say, you know, the season could be over in a week. And from a recruiting standpoint and roster management standpoint, you're already seeing the silly season start with transfers. Mm-hmm. Two offers that North Carolina had last year, Cameron Fletcher at Kentucky and Earl Timberlake at Miami, have already announced their intentions to transfer. So it's already started before the tournament has even begun. And, you know, for all the reasons we've talked about over the last few weeks, this is going to be the most insane spring roster management season really ever. If the season is over a week from now, just something that we'll talk about and dive into for a while.
And who knows? We may actually even have some news, but we don't know because we don't know when the season's going to end. All right, Sean, last crack at it, man. What's your two pennies?
I think it's going to be a lot like 2013. I'm not as confident as I was in UNC beating Villanova as the 8-9, but I think they should be able to pull it off against Wisconsin. And then I think they can be competitive against Baylor for a half before Baylor probably pulls away. I think they have the talent, but if they can mix everything together with the freshman guard shooting well, Walton playing well, and then, you know, the bigs, would love to see Sharp and Baycott get a lot of time together and go from there. But, it's the season has gone by very, very quickly, and hopefully there'll be one more weekend to go. But I think, if they can win one game, that'll be a success.
Yeah, for everybody listening or watching, make sure you enjoy these last however many games there are, because we almost didn't have it this year and we didn't have it last year. And I appreciate, the players being able to suck it up and have so many things be different for them in order to get games on the TV and get games on the schedule. All the changes that these kids and the staff and the coaches had to go through to make this happen and are still doing to make the tournament happen. And I'm also thankful for you guys for being here tonight and making the sacrifices you've had to make to join this podcast and make it as awesome as it has been. As always, we appreciate everybody who listens, tunes in, views, whatever. If you're not an Inside Carolina premium subscriber, make that change, get your life right, get right with IC. For Sean Moran, for Sherelle McMillan, for Greg Barnes, I'm Joey Powell. Special shout out to John Sigley for producing and Johnny T-shirt for sponsoring. This has been the special edition of the Coast to Coast, The Bracketing. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.